Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Jason Coleman, and you are listening to Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast. And welcome to another episode of Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast. I am your one-man book club, Jason Coleman. Thank you so much for joining me. I am here. I apologize for the layoff. I was, as you might know, I'm a public school teacher, so I've been out on summer vacation. And so my wife and I have just been traveling, and I've been trying to get caught up with fixing things around the house and just a million other things going on. I know for my listeners out there, you're probably like, okay, great. So here's Jason making his next excuse as to why he hasn't made a podcast in the last couple months. Sorry, guilty as charged. Anyway, enough of me. Let's go ahead and get to some books here. I think you'll like today's episode. We're going to be reviewing the book 80-20 Your Life, How to Get More Done with Less Effort and Change Your Life in the Process by Damon Zerahadiz. I think I said his name correctly. I apologize if I didn't. Okay, so you might be familiar with the concept of the 80-20 rule. This is also known as the Pareto Principle. And I'll go into a little bit more detail about it in a moment. But basically what the scientist who had come up with this idea, I believe he was an agricultural biologist, if I'm not mistaken. And what he noticed is that he was doing some farming, and he was saying that he was counting his peas that he was growing, and he was saying that 80% of his pea pods were coming from 20% of the actual peas. And he took this sort of 80-20 rule, as he called it, and he started noticing patterns throughout everywhere in science, in psychology, in the workplace, in economics, in your personal life. Like, for example, one of the things they say is that, I'll just say as a public school teacher, this is something that I can relate to. You would say that 20% of the students who are behavior problems will cause 80% of the problems in the class. Or if you are a manager of a sales force, you might say that 20% of your sales force makes 80% of the sales, or something along those lines. And we're going to get more into that. But he's saying that you can actually use this idea in just about all aspects to have a more enjoyable, more productive life. Okay, so let me go ahead and get into that. Now, the first things first, anybody who knows me knows that I try to live my life a bit, or at least I've been trying to incorporate the philosophies of minimalism in my life. And the author does say, like, you know, when he talks to people about the 80-20 principle, one of the first things they say is, oh, is this just another concept about minimalism? And the answer is no. This might be able to combine nicely with minimalism, but the whole idea of minimalism is to reduce your life to only the essential items that you need, or that are causing you the greatest impact in your life. Now, that might be somewhat similar to the 80-20 rule, but the 80-20 rule is much more about making decisions as well, whereas minimalism is, I think, just about reduction. But I'll go into that in a little bit in a second. Okay. Now, I think it should be noted before I go on here about how this book is applicable even in my own life. One of the things about me, if you've listened to a few of my episodes, is you might notice that one of the hobbies that I have when I'm not making podcasts or I'm not traveling is I've taken up in the last few years, I've taken up acrylic painting. And one of the things that at least maybe your experience is different, but at least for me, whenever I've taken up a new hobby, I have this desire to buy all of these new hobby materials, probably because I'm imagining myself using all of these hobbying materials. And the buying process is just so fun and rewarding. I'm getting excited thinking about it right now. But what I notice is after, a couple years of painting, even though I might have dozens and dozens of different paints, I notice that, you know, usually with all of the paint jobs that I do, I normally will only use the same paints over and over again, and then maybe from time to time add in a few different colors. So in other words, out of all of my paints, 80% of the time I'm only using 20% of my available painting supplies. So that would be one of the ways that it's actually involved in my life. A way that this might be involved in your life, at least this is true for my wife as well, is if you think about your wardrobe, 20% of your clothes is what you'll wear 80% of the time. And that's got to be true for most people I know. I mean, think about on the weekends, do you have two or three favorite pairs of pants or shorts and you just seem to go for those every single time while the rest of your wardrobe mostly collects dust? So what the author here is saying is if you think about that concept for a moment, what you could essentially do is you could get rid of 80% of all of your clothes and you probably wouldn't even really notice. That's just absolutely shocking to me. He was talking about how at the workplace, and this is maybe something else that might be applicable to your lives as well, that 80% of his emails and messages were inconsequential, meaning that whether he read them or not, it didn't really make that big of a difference. And he was saying that only about 20% of the emails even needed him to respond to the emails, okay? So that's absolutely something that I can use in my life because sometimes I have this need to reply to emails, maybe as just a polite courtesy to let the person know I got the email. And, you know, if I don't think that there's necessarily anything wrong with that, but you just have to ask yourself, how much time do you have at your job to be giving to all of these things? At what point are you not able to get all of your work done in the allocated time? So this is actually something I'm going to incorporate a bit more. And if I don't have if there's not a need for me to respond, if there weren't specific questions that are being asked, I'm going to go and make an effort to avoid responding to those emails. Also, I note sometimes you can get into a back and forth email chain. This is a little bit of a side note, but we tend to avoid the phone because we feel like the phone will actually cause us to use more time. But I'm actually not sure about that because I know that each time I have to stop what I'm doing and respond to an email and then the email starts getting ping pong back and forth, it probably would have been quicker if I had just called the person and we had spoke for 5 or 6 minutes. So, you know, don't maybe the phone is old technology, but it's still very useful. And I'd like to actually see myself incorporate the phone back into my work schedule a bit more than I have been using it these last few years. Another example is your friends and friendships that you have. They say that we spend about 80% of the time with about 20% of our available friends. So this is important too, at least if you're someone like me, where I've met a lot of people over the years and I value my friendships. So I tend to go out of my way a bit to maintain certain relationships with people. And I don't know if that's really necessary because if 80% of the people I don't even really need to, if, you know, I don't necessarily even spend that much time with, maybe I should be making less of an effort to reach out to them and have them make more of an effort to reach out to me so I can focus more of my time with that 20% of the people who I most enjoy spending my time with. The author also talks about how using the 80-20 rule has helped him with his diet as well. And what he's basically was saying was that if you think about the 100% of possible things that you could do to lose weight, which includes you know, reducing your calories, tracking your macronutrients, increasing your sleep, getting more exercise, he was saying that using 20% of the available options could probably yield at 80% of the gains, okay? So what he did is he said that he just tried to make sure that he incorporated a 15 to 20 minute workout in his schedule every day, and he drastically reduced the amount of processed sugars that he was having, and he said he had dramatic weight loss and increased his fitness significantly just from making those two adjustments. Now, I can't prove this. I don't know. I would have to talk with a nutritionist or a dietitian, but I'm pretty certain that out of all of the food that we eat, we can probably get about 80% of our necessary nutrition from about 20% of the overall calories that we're taking in. So, like, for example, you might say, well, you know, at dinner, you might have like a steak, some potatoes, a side of vegetables, a salad. But I wonder if you only ate half that meal if you would still get a pretty high percentage of the necessary nutrients that you need for survival. I'm not sure. I don't know, but I'm inclined to think so. Now, when my wife and I were traveling recently, one of the things that we both struggle with a bit, and maybe you do too, is we both want to make great decisions. Like, we don't want to be caught making a poor decision. So we tend to overanalyze. Okay, we'll look at 13 different types of nail clippers in hopes of finding the perfect one. And normally what winds up happening is a lot of the items begin to look similar. You begin to get analysis paralysis where you can't really make a decision because you're scared of making the wrong decision and you don't want to waste your money. And so the whole process can drag out. And when you think about it, all of the time that you've now spent trying to come up with what you should do is time that, you know, you could have been using to do other more productive, more enjoyable things in your life. So what the author is saying, so my wife was talking about this concept that she came across, which I think pretty much fits into the book. And what the concept is try to make decisions that will make you 80% happy, okay? Like, you're not going to get everything you want. Like, perhaps you're out at a restaurant and you're thinking you can't decide between a lot of different things on the menu because maybe some things are, you know, you're just in between, you're not really sure. You want to make that perfect decision about what's going to bring you maximal taste happiness. Instead of thinking of it that way, which can be pretty stressful trying to make the right decision. I mean, I've certainly been in that position more times than I'd like to count. Just think to yourself, what's going to make me 80% happy? Like, okay, there's a chance that the chicken might be dry, or yeah, there's a chance that the portion might be a little bit smaller than I was hoping, whatever the case is. But are you mostly getting what you want? Are you 80% happy? A buddy who I jog with on the weekends, he just recently took a new job. And we were talking about this, and I said, yeah, you know, I was talking about trying to become 80% happy. And he said, oh, yeah, that's what I did with my job. There's a couple things that I was unhappy with, but I think that I got about 80% of what I wanted. And I think that's a great way to also 80-20 your life is try to think about decisions that will make you just 80% happy. Stop shooting for 100%. It's just way too stressful and impossible to obtain. Now, I think there's a dark side to this 80-20 principle, and I'm not really sure exactly how I'm going to go about doing it, because I work in public education, the highest emphasis of success has always been test scores, okay? We just, in our society, or most societies, I think, we just put a very, very, very high value on test scores. It's something that can be standardized. It's something that you can use to compare with, growth over time. You can use it to compare to other schools. You can put the numbers in a spreadsheet pretty easily to track all of this data. It's, you know, we're just a very, very data-driven test scoring society. So I don't really want to debate whether we should be or we shouldn't be. I'll save that for a different book. But I do want to say that as a teacher, what should be my goals in terms of increasing the amount of test scores that we're going to get as a teacher? What can I do to increase the overall averages of my students? And there's a few different approaches. Now, one approach, and probably the most egalitarian approach, would be to say, you do a great job teaching. Hopefully, everybody benefits a little bit, and that'll bring up the overall average of your scores. But even though that might be the most, politically correct way of going about it, I'm not sure it's the most effective. As a matter of fact, since we in California go by a more or less a pass-fail system in public education with state tests, I would actually argue that there's only a couple students that a teacher can reasonably, I think, push over a limit. So if a student was only a couple points of, you know, passing the test, or if they were only a couple points from failing the test, though, that small group of students will probably determine how well or how poorly you might be evaluated as a teacher. So you could say maybe you should focus 80% of your energies on that 20% of the students. I would say that would be the most effective way to improve your overall standing in evaluation. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying that it's the most democratic thing to do, but it probably is the most effective. As a matter of fact, I know this because a buddy of mine who I I hang out with, we were discussing something because he has a five-year-old daughter who's going to be starting school, and he says he wants to put her into a private school. And when I asked him why, he said, I'm just worried because schools seem to be so focused on test scores, and she's pretty smart, that after they, you know, work with her a little bit and they see that she's pretty competent, they're just going to write her off as somebody who doesn't need that much help, and they're going to move on to those other marginal academic students. And I really had no response for it because I think he's right. Maybe he shouldn't be right, but he probably is. So that's another darker side of the 80-20 rule that we should always be aware of. Now, the last thing that I want to talk about that was in this book that I think is meaningful is this idea of Parkinson's law. And let me explain what Parkinson's law is. And what the author says is that Parkinson's law states that the amount of work that is necessary to accomplish a task is directly proportional to how much time you're allocating towards the task. I don't know if I worded that completely correctly, so let me give you an example to clarify what I'm saying. If you wanted to clean your house and you were going to give yourself 4 hours to clean your house, then cleaning your house will magically take 4 hours, okay? Now, if you decided to clean your house in 1 hour, then cleaning your house would magically take 1 hour. Now, somebody might say, oh, well, there's no way you could do as good of a job cleaning in 1 hour as you could in 4 hours. Okay, I absolutely agree. But here's the thing, okay? And this is where I'm thinking about the 80-20. Now, I have no proof of this, but I would say that when out of all of the details, 100% of the details that people could notice when they walk into your house, they probably only notice about 20% of those details. So if you just focused your cleaning on just a few areas of your house, okay, that would probably accomplish about 80% of what somebody would see rather than spending so many more hours, which is probably going to go mostly unnoticed, okay? So that's another thing to think about too, is Parkinson's law. So when you decide to give yourself a smaller allocation of time to finish a task, you're going to immediately begin to 80-20 the situation. Now, this is important for me as an English teacher, because since I have an overwhelming amount of papers to grade, I could very easily spend all of my additional time for planning, or my additional time for making appointments, contacting others, where I could basically spend all of my allocated time on grading papers. It is that much of a time sink. And most of my other teachers, especially ones that have to teach at least some English throughout their day, would say the exact same thing. So now I can go about trying to fix this one of two ways. I could say to myself, well, so I will just keep grading papers until they all get done because that's just my job as an English teacher. But now we're forgetting the 80-20 principle when we do that. You're assuming that the students are going to absorb 100% of what you've said. And I just don't think that that's realistic. And I don't think that that's actually what happens. I would say, at least from my own personal experience, that when I would get feedback from a teacher, I mostly skimmed over the bulk of what they were saying, and I just focused on a couple small points, okay? So what if I were to actually do that? Instead of writing, you know, paragraph after paragraph of feedback, what if I just gave a couple small bullet points? I would be able to not only completely streamline my grading process, but I would immediately give them just a couple things to think about, which is often so much more meaningful than loads and loads of feedback, okay? So that's just something else to think about how Parkinson's law can also help you with your 80-20 rule. So it's the same thing with, you know, if you wanted to cook a bunch of meals, right? So you're thinking to yourself, well, I want to cook a meal. Am I going to give myself 3 hours or 1 hour? Could you cook a better meal in 3 hours than in 1 hour? Absolutely. You could, you know, make it much more of an enjoyable meal. But could you also make a pretty enjoyable meal within 1 hour if you gave yourself that kind of a time frame? You probably could, and that would give you 2 additional hours to do the other things in your life that you wanted to do. And the author actually even does talk about meal prep, and he was saying that you should try to only have about 5 to 7 ingredients when cooking a meal, okay? in order to maximize your efficiency with cooking. He said, if you are the sort of person who's using a checklist on a day-to-day basis, such as myself, you should only get about 5 to 7 things on your checklist. Now, me personally, I like to get tons and tons of things onto my checklist. I feel better about myself, and it's just very satisfying to cross things off of my checklist. But I'll be the first to say that I can get overwhelmed pretty quickly with my checklist as well. And sometimes that discourages me to the point where I don't really want to, I don't really want to do the things on my checklist. And very often I'll just get distracted and do something else because I just feel overwhelmed. So that's another thing that I'm going to try to do in order to implement the 80-20 rule in my life. Okay, last thing. My wife and I were having this conversation because she was reading some sort of a book about how to enjoy money more, enjoying your wealth more, I guess. I haven't read the book yet. Maybe I'll do a podcast on that one next. But we were talking and she said, maybe I should, instead of buying a bunch of small handbags, maybe I should just buy one, small inexpensive handbags. Maybe I should just buy one really expensive handbag that I'm going to enjoy. And I said, sure, you should. But if you remember the 80-20 rule, I think that that would only be meaningful if you were willing to throw out 80% of the handbags that you already own. And at first she said, okay, that sounds like a deal. I'll spend a bunch of money on a handbag and I'll get rid of 80% of the handbags that I have. And I said, okay, deal. And she was kind of taken aback because I've always been a bit skeptical of spending a lot of money on things that I consider to be frivolous, like cars or clothes or whatever the case is. But I was more than confident and supportive of her trying to do this because I know that, believe it or not, spending a bunch of money on a new handbag is actually more difficult than trying to get rid of the possessions that you already have. Because you're not emotionally invested in what you don't own, but you are emotionally invested in what you do own, whether it's getting any usage or not. Okay, so I hope I have given you something to think about. 80-20 Your Life, How to Get More Done with Less Effort and Change Your Life in the Process by Damon Zerahadias. I will be back in hopefully a couple weeks to give you guys another podcast. I hope you enjoyed. Again, if you get the opportunity, if you'd like to give me a good rating on iTunes or on Stitcher, it really helps to grow my base and, you know, it can be very validating for me as well. But either way, I'm just happy that you stayed with me until the end and I hope you enjoyed this review. And until then, happy reading.